Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, this is Owen Jones. This is the Cheerful Election Daily. Well, blimey. It is now 15 days until the general election. I like to quote esteemed philosophers on this podcast, if you hadn't noticed. I'd like to quote Europe. It's the final countdown. I'll stop that now. This is going to be quite a quick one tonight because I have been back home, the People's Republic of Stockport, if you're asking, and it is late, and Emma, the poor soul, but also an incredible, talented human being, I mean poor soul because she has to spend evenings listening to some of this gibberish and then have to put it out, probably having quite a lot of other better things to do with her life. So I am going to have to be short and sweet. So a little caveat, I have not watched Andrew Neil's interview. I tried to watch it on Virgin Trains. The Wi-Fi did not allow me to do that. Hopefully under public ownership, that will change. Ooh, never take a night off, do I? And what I would say is, it obviously it doesn't sound like the best interview ever done in the history of humanity. I would be, what? Let me try and do this carefully and sensitively. I was on Politics Live today, which is now your yesterday. I didn't think it was the most fair of panels. I was on with a former speechwriter to Tony Blair, a member of the hard right think tank, the Institute for Economic Affairs, and James Brokenshire, a Tory minister. And I have a huge respect for the presenter, but I was grilled as I was a cabinet minister. I held my own. I stood my ground. And I think on the issue of anti-Semitism, I've had this, what I always call a walk and chew gum approach, which I have, and this is not about me being a victim because I'm not here, but I do have the scars on my back on this one. So my argument has always been that anti-Semitism does exist on the fringe of the left. There's a broader group in denial about that fact. And also there are those who are not Jewish who have not had defeating anti-Semitism at heart, but more wanting to attack the Labour leadership. And the idea that the Labour leadership or the vast majority of Labour members are anti-Semitic is a smear. I mean, I spend so much of my life, like tonight, with Labour members and the vast majority abhor anti-Semitism. But that doesn't mean Labour dealt with this properly. I don't think they did. They were too slow. Didn't show enough emotional sensitivity. There's a really good piece, which I recommend you reading, by the brilliant left-wing Jewish journalist Rachel Shabby. I'm just bringing it up now just so I can get the headline right, so you all read it. The treatment of anti-Semitism in our politics should fill us with despair. Yeah, and it's just about how this issue has, you know, anti-Semitism is rising in British society and in other societies. Synagogues attacked, Jewish graves attacked, you know, Jewish people facing abuse online and in the real world. And it just goes through the sensitivities of it. And, you know, you can only ever understand the, I mean, I need to be careful here because I don't want to be goy-splaining because there will be, I'm sure, Jewish people listening. But if you're a member of a minority that's faced 2,000 years of persecution, culminating in the attempt to physically exterminate the Jewish people within living memory, there are literally people alive today who remember being in the camps like Auschwitz. They remember SS guards. They remember being herded into kind of cattle trains. And they remember watching people murdered by the Nazis in the biggest single systematic crime committed by human hand. And you've always got to, we've always got to start on that basis that people, when they get, you know, it's not all kind of, oh, they're being a plot, this is all a plot and all the rest of it. People have very, you know, that collective trauma is, you know, there's this sense almost of things can turn at any moment. In France in the early 20th century, and this was a big trauma that Jewish people suffered, which predated the rise of the Nazis. It was called the Dreyfus Affair, and basically a French Jewish army officer was stitched up. And it was a big trauma at the time because there was this sense that the plight of Jewish people in Western European nations in particular, not so much in the East where they still suffered terrible pogroms and persecution, not least in Tsarist Russia. But in the West, there was this sense of, we're finally being accepted. We're French, we're German. They accept that's who we are. And then this whole saga unleashed this terrible tide of anti-Semitism. And there was this sense, all, you know, of kind of, oh, things will suddenly turn. I'll have to flee. You know, they'll, you know, even if that I seem accepted at this given time, then things will change. So you always have to start at that point. So I would say that, you know, the number of allegations of anti-Semitism, we're talking about 0.1% of the Labour membership is tiny. And I would say as well that the Labour leadership are full of people who fought anti-Semitism and racism their whole lives. But you can't just say that when Jewish people express anger and anguish, you know, this is often, well, it is coming from a place. It's coming from a place often of real anxiety and fear, and people need to reassure people, you know, not get into this very emotionally tone deaf thing, which I see sometimes on my own Facebook and elsewhere, which is just rah, 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 knuckle down, defensiveness. And actually a lot of it is emotional intelligence. Of course, the right-wing media are using all of this to beat the Labour Party. Of course, that's what they will do. They will use anything to attack the left and all the rest of it. Now, to put that in broader context, and this was why I was frustrated. I was on with James Brokenshire, as I say, on this balance panel. And, you know, there are lessons I will heed, not least from Jews in this country. I'm not going to take lessons from the Tories. You know, this is a party which has voted to support their allies, the Hungarian anti-Semitic government, a virtual dictatorship, which uses gratuitous anti-Semitism to short support. In a society in Hungary where anti-Semitism, I'm afraid, is rife. This is a government led by a man who calls black people pickaninnies. A government which oversaw the persecution of black Windrush Britons, stripping them of medical care, kicking them from their homes, deporting them from their own country. This is a government which whose leader compared Muslim women to bank robbers and letterboxes, led to a 375% increase in hate crimes. And Baroness Saeeda Arsi, the most prominent female Muslim Tory politician, has spoken about how anti-Semitism is just there from the top to the bottom in the Tory party, how she's been in frightening meetings with the likes of Michael Gove, who she said she would be terrified to me. Look up the interview if he ever became prime minister. Where the Muslim Council of Britain yesterday issued a statement talking about how pandemic Islamophobia was in the Tory party. We've had repeated members and, you know, suspended, but then quietly readmitted. We've got MPs who've shared posts supporting Tommy Robinson. One MP who stood on the same platform with someone who supported genocide against Burma's Muslims. It's a prime minister who called gay people bum boys, tank top bum boys. Sorry, let me be accurate about that. And, you know, in overseeing a cabinet in which there's not a single gay person open, at least. And yet lots of them who voted against the civil liberties of LGBTQ people. Do we ever talk about the threat posed to LGBTQ people by this government, which has now lapsed into, you know, for example, one good thing I'll say about Theresa May was her commitment to supporting modernising and updating trans rights, which languish in this country. And this government have obviously completely reverted to Tory type. I just look at this and just think, you know, there's a real menace to minorities in this country, which is established. I'm a gay guy. I grew up under Section 28. LGBTQ education, quite literally barred from schools, being taught. And one of the good things that came out of, you won't have heard of it because of the whole fury, but yesterday the Race and Faith manifesto issued by the Conservative Party, which talked of, which committed to integrating, for example, education about anti-Semitism into the national curriculum. Long overdue. Don't know why we don't do it now. Same with Islamophobia and other forms of racism and bigotry. I sometimes say all this stuff and I kind of feel, get yelled by people on both sides. I get some people going, ah, oh, you're just fueling the smear campaign against the Labour Party, which I think is ridiculous. And then others who say, oh, you're just an apologist for the Labour Party with all of this, that and the other. And I just think, you know, if you're an anti-racist, you're consistent anti-racist, or you're not an anti-racist. You know, you know, I've written articles about anti-Semitism on the left ever since I started writing in 2011. I wrote a piece for the New Statesman in 2011 about a Labour MP now passed away who I believed he used anti-Semitic tropes, classic dual loyalty about the British ambassador to Israel because he was Jewish. You've got to be consistent about these things. So anyway, this was all not that cheerful, and Emma does need to go to bed. I'm so sorry, Emma. I'm an absolute disgrace, and I hope there is some compensation at me dragging out my distress at you having to... Do not edit this out. If you edit this out, I'll complain on Twitter. Emma's a hero. Everyone shower her with love. So the fight continues. There is just over 2 weeks left. The polling does show, as things stand, things have shifted towards Labour from a difficult low base. But the Welsh poll, national polls and all the rest of it show that Remainers are coming back. Leavers in particular remain the big challenge. Just got to think about the big policies that people really care about ending austerity, ending cuts, investing in public services funded by the rich who are booming like never before, not punishing young people with debt, dealing with the housing crisis, mass council house building programme, you know, public ownership of utilities. These things are all popular. But Labour have to communicate them in exciting and hopeful ways. And that, you know, about a country with so much talent and wealth and resources to overcome anything. And that's where everyone else comes in. So it's going to be hard and difficult. But I want to do a quick update before I go to bed and fight another day. And let's do this. Let's do this, everyone. Come on. Chin up. Let's sit, turn that frown around. Let's see that smile. I can see you there. I'm not. It sounds really creepy now. I just realised it sounds like I'm a stalker. I'm not stalking you, I promise. And I'm not hiding in your room. This is getting worse. Look, let's do this. Keep fighting, everyone. And, you know, there's a mass movement out there that you are not alone. You're listening to me in whatever context. Maybe you're not listening to me alone. I hope this isn't you and your lover listening to this. It's not the best aphrodisiac listening to me babbling on. Just think about what can be achieved. And we are up against this disgraceful, disgusting government. And there are flaws with Labour. I've gone through some of them in this very podcast. But let's just keep things in perspective and also have hope and optimism. I'll be less tired tomorrow, I hope. And I will see you then. If you like this podcast, give it some stars, give it some love, give it a review. And I will speak to you anon, or just tomorrow. Lots of love, bye-bye. Election Daily is produced by the Cheerful team, including Jeff Lloyd, Emma Corsham, Joe Kenyon, and Joel Pearce, with music from Pete Frazier.